This is Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm Sarah Felberg, editor of Las Vegas Weekly, and frankly, guys, I'm a little tired tonight. Today, our annual awards issue came out, and it's a doozy. It is jam-packed with the best that Las Vegas has to offer, from dumplings to DJs, concert calendars to golf courses. To see all of our winners, and there are well over 100 this year, you'll have to pick up a copy of the magazine. It's available at 1,600 locations, give or take, around town, so it's not real hard to find. But we're here to give you a sneak peek today. I've got managing editor Spencer Patterson in the studio with me, and associate editor Ken Miller as well. And we're going to talk about some of the places, people, and things that made the cut. Thanks so much for joining me, guys.
Cool. Thanks for having us. Nice to be here.
So we're all a little bit tired right now. This is one of our biggest issues of the year, and it is just craziness. Ken, you were kind of the organizational mastermind behind this issue. How are you feeling right now?
Very tired. I think I said thanks to be here. That's how burned out I am right now.
I love it. I love it. So this year's issue, we have a combination of staff picks and Reader's Choice Awards. Tell me a little bit, Ken, about all the different people who were involved in picking those staff picks.
Well, we have 8 staff members with a combined, 100 years of experience probably in Las Vegas.
At least.
And we, am I exaggerating, am I? Maybe a little bit. And we have, I think, about 5 freelancers, all of whom we work with extensively and know the Valley very well. And we basically just put the word out to them to come up with, the cream of the crop in all these categories. And I think, for the most part, I think they nailed it. I think this is a very representative list of Las Vegas.
Definitely. And I have to say, for people out there who don't know how this works, it really isn't just one person saying, this is the best, and that's it. This is something we always have a lot of meetings going into this issue.
Very collaborative, yes.
Yeah, a lot of discussions, some heated. When we can't decide what has the best cocktail menu or the best pizza, and we all have our personal favorites. We try not to let it get too ugly in there.
Especially the food writers all have their own, particular kinds of tastes.
Definitely.
So they had different opinions about things, and that was kind of tricky.
It's fun, though. I think, to me, part of the fun is kind of fighting it out and figuring out what we really think the best of the best is when there are so many potential winners in a lot of these categories.
Yeah, but for the most part, I think it really came out very well. I'm very pleased.
And it looks great, too, so shout out to Ryan Olbrich for his great work on it.
Yep, that's our art director. He's awesome. My only complaint about the art in this week's issue is the opening page of the package actually features a lovely picture of me, but he cut my head off completely.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, he has this habit of putting pictures of me in the magazine without my face. I don't know if he's trying to tell me something, maybe?
I think it's just coincidence.
All right, we'll go with that.
You're reading way too much into that.
From the neck down, it's okay. And that picture actually it's from one of my favorite categories. Of course, I got to write that category. It was the best place to eat with your hands, and we gave the award to Hot and Juicy Crawfish in Chinatown. And we brought back some leftovers from that photo shoot. The picture is awesome. You guys are going to have to check it out at lasvegasweekly.com or in this week's issue. And the way Hot and Juicy works is they serve everything without utensils, really. It's all shrimp and crawfish and lobsters and crabs, all that come in literally plastic bags, just doused in different seasonings and sauces, super spicy, and you roll up your sleeves, literally strap on a bib, and you just rip it all to pieces and devour. It's pretty, you guys saw the leftovers, smelled the leftovers. It's pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been there as well. It's a crazy place. I like how you can order everything to your liking for the spice, because that place can get very, very spicy.
Yeah, one of the tips.
Matter of fact, there's a little anecdote in Sarah's write-up about one of her co-diners who decided to go to the bathroom before washing his hands. And, well, you'll have to read the rest in Las Vegas Weekly.
Yeah, be careful. Just be careful. And they actually have a new location right now, Hot and Juicy Crawfish. They have a new location opening up on Spring Mountain Road, a little further east from their current location. And that's going to be opening this weekend with a grand opening next Friday. So go check it out.
Some of this food just looks amazing. As I thumb through it now, I'm just getting really hungry looking at it.
Kudos also to Beverly Poppy, our food photographer.
Yeah,
the best
stuff.
The best in the city.
Definitely. And Speaking of hungry, I think we're all probably a little thirsty now, too. Ken, you had a category that I thought was really fun in regards to one of your favorite local venues that's right across the street from where we're talking right now, the Freakin' Frog.
I'd say my favorite local venue, actually. Yeah, our category for this, we decided to get creative because Freakin' Frog has the largest beer selection in the city, arguably the country, and that's not an exaggeration either. This is a place I go to quite often. I rarely have the bottled beer, so I was curious to know, like, for example, how many beers did they have from Belgium? Turns out they have 90.
And we were guessing something. We were in that meeting talking about, we're like, oh, the 40 best beers from Belgium, something like that. And I remember
we
you
weren't
coming
even
back,
close.
No, like half of what they actually have.
Yeah, this is a place where you can really experiment with everything you've ever dreamed of trying. So we decided to focus on the 90 beers from Belgium, but obviously this is a bar you can go to and get anything you want.
So what's the best way for people like me who haven't spent that much time at the Freakin' Frog? How, when there's that many beers, it's like over 300 that they have there. How do you figure out what you want?
Well, you find Jack, the guy who's always there. You're familiar with him too. And just ask him for the big book. And there's a huge ever-changing book that contains every single beer that they have. If it's in stock, it's in the book.
Awesome.
And it's served cold. And yeah, it's a great experience. And they also have a great selection of taps, which changes probably every 2 weeks. And feature some things you probably will not find anywhere else.
Very cool. I know if you're a lady and you talk to Jack, you should also ask him for a kiss because he tends to carry around a bag of Hershey's Kisses wherever he goes. You can get a little chocolate with your beer. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I initially asked Jack how many beers they had from Belgium, and he said a huge ass amount. So I was going to make that the category, but I decided, no, let's keep it professional.
Always professional at the Weekly. That's our middle name. What about, Spencer, you were responsible for some of the A&E categories. Do you have any favorites this year?
Well, I mean, we had Holding On to Sound in the studio here a couple of weeks ago. They did a live set for us, and they were our best live band winner again this year, second year in a row. We considered a lot of different bands. There's a lot of great bands in this town. And in the end, I mean, we ended up back where we started again with them. I think it was it ended up being kind of the choice. It had to be. And then the readers picked Howly Amano, which is a local kind of island reggae group, really good live band. So I think the readers did a good job this year. You know, there's been years where the readers pick, a cover band or a band from California sometimes. It's kind of random, but this year they really did a good job. I think they took it seriously, and, that was a good choice too.
Yeah, I have to say, Ken and I spent some time also with web editor April Corbin in my office a couple weeks ago, literally going through every single reader vote and counting them up and tabulating which ones won. And our readers did a really good job this year. Like
they really
amazing
did.
Votes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, we always joke around about how whenever we have best Italian food in Reader's Choice, it always goes to Olive Garden.
Or Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Outback.
Exactly. And while those definitely hit the spot when you're in a certain mood, I would argue that Olive Garden really is not our best Italian food in Vegas.
Right,
and
sure.
I think there's a lot of people who would
Olive
have my
Garden
back on that.
Yeah,
probably Olive Garden would too. I know last year we gave an award to the best Olive Garden.
That's right.
Well, and if you remember, the reader's choice was none.
None.
So our readers, they're pretty smart people. I mean, I give them a lot of credit, but they really put their hearts into this one. I was very happy with some of these picks. I love the best tweeter going to Carrie Haskell at Retro Bakery.
She's awesome. I follow Carrie on Twitter. My Twitter handle? Little plug right now, at Sarah Feldberg. Go ahead, follow. I'm almost at 1,000. Come on, please help me.
Oh, that's a lot of followers.
I know, right? I'm working
jealous.
On it. Maybe after this show, I'll hit the mark. But Carrie is awesome to follow. She tweets not only about the bakery, of course, but she, is a small business owner, and she and her husband and a very small staff do everything that they do there. The custom cakes, all the amazing cupcakes, all these really original flavors. So she's tweeting constantly about what it's like to own this bakery and be producing all the time. It's kind of like having a live feed from one of those Cupcake Wars shows on Food Network, or the shows where they follow. I can't remember the name of it, but that Baltimore bakery where the guy makes the crazy cakes. I don't know what it's called, but it's kind of like that. She's always talking about, burning her arms when she's trying to make something or eating candy for breakfast. And she's just got so much energy. Even if you have no interest in buttercream frosting, she's a really fun follow. And that's at Retro Bakery.
I was also happy to see that they picked the best strip casino as Cosmopolitan, which, I don't think anyone would argue with, but I'm glad to see our readers know that that's the case as well. Also, best off-strip casino, Red Rock.
Yeah,
great
definitely.
Choice. Best tattoo shop, Pussycat Tattoo Parlor. These are all great picks.
Yeah, actually, the owner of Pussycat Tattoo is Dirk Vermin. He's actually going to be in the studio later on, talk about something completely different, but that's kind of a cool coincidence that he's going to be here later to talk about punk rock.
Yay. And speaking of Cosmopolitan, one of the other, they did, I mean, they won a ton of awards this year in all of our different categories. We break the awards into dining, nightlife, arts and entertainment, people, and this and that, are kind of catch-all category. And the Cosmopolitan did pretty well. They picked up some different awards in almost every single category. One of the ones they won in A&E was the best concert calendar. And they've had a really amazing group of artists come through that hotel in the last, they've only been open 6 months.
I think part of it is they have so many different spaces where they stage things. They have, you know, the lounge where they've had, you know, some really interesting bands like Best Coast and Robert Randolph and Fits in the Tantrums. Kind of up and coming or just smaller acts. And then they have,
and those shows are free, right? And those shows,
that's, which is right, that's amazing. And they have, you know, Chandelier and Bond, which are kind of like, you know, DJ spaces in the main casino. And then they have the pool, which where they've kind of been staging most of their big acts. They have like the Flaming Lips coming through. They've had Mumford and Sons, Lauryn Hill. Then they've also had some shows in a ballroom called the Chelsea, like the Strokes and the Black Keys. So the only caveat to all this is we really wish, and there's rumors that at some point they're going to be opening like a full-scale music venue, and at this point I don't know if that's true or not, but so we did say, you know, our one hope is that all these great acts at some point, or at least the ones that aren't free, could end up in some kind of a, you know, permanent space where we could see them the way they deserve to be seen.
Definitely. Are you listening, Cosmo? Do you hear us? We want a music venue, a dedicated music venue. Because they're booking, I mean, they really are doing a great job of booking bands, especially at Book and Stage, that lounge you mentioned with the free shows, bands that otherwise probably wouldn't come here.
Yeah, and a lot of them have never been here, and a lot of them, like you said, they either wouldn't or, you know, there really just isn't maybe a space for them. They kind of slip between the cracks. So, and then they seem to have their finger on the pulse of like what's next and what's new, and you know, Vegas doesn't always have that kind of stuff coming through. So
definitely, I have to admit, when the Fits and the Tantrums were here, I went all four nights in a row. A little bit stalkerish, but it was really fun.
What other city but Vegas could you do that?
Exactly.
I also like how, you know, there's a very good representative sample of the arts in Las Vegas. I mean, the arts here gets kind of a bad rap sometimes, I think, especially in the national media. And I was very happy to see that there's, you know, the Best Art Gallery, Trifecta Gallery, excellent choice.
And one thing that's interesting to me is that, like, the readers picked Blackbird Studios for Best Art Gallery and not, like, the Bellagio or something just, you know, so obvious and huge like that, which isn't to say the Bellagio isn't a great gallery, but it's kind of cool that, you know, our readers knew about something a little more off the beaten path.
It's clear they thought this out before they filled the ballot out. I mean, they actually, like, they know the city pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Blackbird Studios in particular definitely jumps out. As it's brand new. It just opened this past year. And it's really, besides being an art gallery, it's kind of become a gathering space for young people. They're having really interesting exhibits there, a whole variety of different mediums, up-and-coming artists that might not show in other places. So it definitely, when you think about it, really makes sense, and it just shows that our readers are really in touch with their city.
And also the bar scene.
Oh, of course.
Our bar scene is wonderfully represented in this issue. I love this. I mean, we have the readers picking, you know, the Griffin for Best Hipster Bar. You know, great
classic
choice. We have, you know, the Best Happy Hour as being at Blue Martini. I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of picks here that I think are going to be considered controversial. Even the readers' picks, I think, are going to be pretty well received.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the nightlife categories, definitely. That's to me, the nightlife awards are always some of the hardest to give because there are so many amazing nightlife venues in this town. And the nightlife companies that run them do just a really incredible job coming up with exciting parties, the decor, just everything. We've become one of the top nightclub destinations in the country. So choosing can be so hard, but we've got some really cool awards. One of my favorite awards of the entire issue is the Most Dangerous Drink Award, and that's one that went to the Ninth Island cocktail at Frankie's Tiki Room. And if you've never been to Frankie's Tiki Room or had the Ninth Island, it, according to, well, Kristen Peterson, is an experience. And I have been to Frankie's. I haven't had that particular cocktail, but I can attest to the strength of it. Exactly. I mean, it's a doozy. It's going to leave you with some definite feelings in the morning.
Her write-up kind of made me want to try it a little bit.
One.
Maybe, yeah, just one, yeah.
Like a double dare almost.
Exactly.
Dare you to try it. Well, that's just a little tiny taste of what's in this week's Las Vegas Weekly Awards issue. You can pick it up all over town, study it, learn it, love it. And thanks for reading and thanks for voting, Las Vegas. We really appreciate you taking the time and the thought to vote for our awards this year.
Welcome back to Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag. This is Spencer Patterson, managing editor for Las Vegas Weekly. This weekend, the streets of downtown Las Vegas will be filled with the sounds of punk rock, hardcore, and ska. It's the Punk Rock Bowling Music Festival, and it's happening on an outdoor stage at the corner of 6th and Carson, and in clubs across the Fremont East District from Friday through Monday. Now, for some, the idea of a massive annual punk rock gathering in Las Vegas might seem strange, but my next guest knows better. I'd like to welcome Dirk Vermin, leader of local band The Vermin, owner and operator of the Pussycat Tattoo Parlor, and the author in progress behind Boredom Was the Reason, a history of Las Vegas' punk scene. Welcome to the show, Dirk.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess let's start at the beginning. Take me back. When and how did punk rock first hit Las Vegas?
You know, my friend Eric Hill, who I'm in a side band with called Naked City Romeos, and he started a band with Chris Moon and Joe Corbin, a couple of the guys through the years, called Bad Habits, which became The Swell, which eventually became MIA.
And what year are we talking
about? That would have been 79. So it's a ways back, you know, and I'm sure there are people who would dispute it, but he's considered, at least for the sake of my book, to be the original Vegas punk, for sure. And so it kind of starts with him and a very small group of guys. Then MIA kind of kicked off. Then they went to Orange County, and then you have a bunch of other bands coming up after that. So,
and at that point, when the first bands were starting out, I mean, were there very many people going to the shows, or was there like a big group of people kind of wanting something like that just didn't have it?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a slow start for just a small group of guys, and they ended up going. I don't have all the venues in front of me, but there were skating rinks and the back of this place and that place, and backyard parties were huge way before even the desert shows that we did. So those things really, you know, just helped kind of kickstart this small scene, and then it got big, you know, well into, I would say, probably high point about 85 or so, when it really, really was, and then it kind of went a little different direction by the time the 90s kicked in, so.
Who were some of the other best bands, you know, at that time around?
Well, Self Abuse. Because you had Todd Sampson, who the Swell, before they were MIA, Eric Hill was the singer, and then he was a drunk guy, and they kicked him out finally. And so Andy Zaffuto stepped in, who would later start AWOL, and Andy Zaffuto didn't last. And then Todd Sampson joined, but he was only 16. So when the Swell decided to become MIA, Todd couldn't go. He was just too young. His parents just said, you can't.
When they moved to California.
When MIA moved to California, and at that point became a California band. You know, I think there was even some sense of betrayal within the scene that they left and that Vegas wasn't good enough. But they were always welcome back. And so Todd started Self Abuse with Anthony Hudak and Vince Chula and Sean Quinn and Matt Dudenack. And, you know, that became, so they became, they kind of took over where MIA left off as far as being one of the bigger bands. So Self Abuse was huge. And then there were smaller bands like F8 and I'm just pulling this out of my hat, so to speak. But, you know, there was a lot of great, you know, little local bands. You might have some notes over there with names on it that I can help you with.
Well, I was also thinking, I mean, around that time, it seemed like a lot of the top punk bands from outside the area started coming through, too. And playing, like you said, some of the desert shows or warehouse shows.
Or you know, I mean, I think it was 82 when Social Distortion, their first show here was at Vegas World. Which is insane when you think about it. But somebody's father worked there, and it was closed for the week. They knew the showroom was going to be closed for the week. And so they got Social Distortion to come down and play Vegas World for their first Vegas appearance. So that was pretty cool.
What were those early shows like as far as, did the cops leave you alone?
No.
Did they come down and get involved? What was the...
Yeah, I mean, because you had the Roche Hotel, you had Room 13, and these were, Guy Griebel and Lance Gilman. Guys like that you know, started these venues for bands to come. And they were basically just rented out warehouses, and they do the best they could to keep order, and most of the time did. But, you know, much like in the case when the Dead Kennedys played here, which would have been, I think, 82, 83, by the time, because Butthole Surfers were supposed to be on that gig and all these other bands, by the time the cops got there, the Dead Kennedys played, and then that was the end of the show.
Right, and they shut it down.
Yeah, they shut it down. And that used to happen quite a bit. You know, and, you know, it was just one of the things you kind of had to deal with trying to run punk rock in a town that didn't watch you. So,
I mean, at the height of that movement here, what do you think the reputation of the Vegas punk scene was, like, beyond Vegas?
I think it was really good, because also you had, like, Subterfuge, who actually, they were signed to Mystic Records, and that was Marky Suter and Gigli Locatelli and, you know, a handful of other guys, you know, that played with them as well. And they got to tour... You know, they got to do shows, especially in San Francisco and Phoenix and all throughout the West and And whereas MIA went all the way to New York, which was kind of big, but by then they weren't, you know, they were on Alternative Tentacle Records and, you know, they were getting tour support and stuff like that. So at that time, I think Subterfuge was the one, because they got a record deal, a horrible record deal and a horrible sounding record, but there were some classics on it. But they got to do some national, you know, like with 7 Seconds, go up to Reno and things like that and start to build a Vegas reputation. But very few bands did much outside of singles and cassette recordings and things like that. So,
was there a sense in the scene that, you know, the scene was a lot better than maybe people knew? You know, obviously the Southern California scene was huge.
Well, without Northern, a doubt. You know, I think that's one of the reasons I took the book on. You know, and it's been a struggle. I've been dealing with this for 6 years trying to get this thing out, and I've had my own personal issues to deal with and my own personal feelings, because I don't always like 80s punk. Because for me, I never stopped playing. I continued to play from 85 until now. I've never stopped. So my heyday, my best day wasn't 85. It was, you know, last year. So sometimes it's hard for me to separate my personal feelings from the project that I've started. And that's a weird thing to say out loud, because I've never really mentioned that I don't like the 80s that much. So, you know, but having said that, of course I love it. And that's where my roots are from. And we had a little punk rock picnic over at Sunset Park, and that was kind of cool to see a lot of old friends and stuff. And, you know, there was a lot of some bad vibes that we're able to let go of and see people and realize that, you know, we do have this in common. So that's for, you know, for sure.
I mean, speaking of old friends, the last couple of years have seen the Vegas scene, the punk scene, take a couple of big hits.
Without a doubt.
You know, first the death of Mike Conley, and then with the equally unexpected death of Todd Sampson. And both of them were maybe best known for having fronted MIA at one point. Obviously, Todd went on to other bands as well. And that was, you know, just a terrible loss for the scene.
Yeah, I was on stage at the Double Down when I heard that Conley had passed. And I had spoke to Conley 2 weeks before, and when he was in Chicago. And he was going to come through Vegas, and we were going to sit down and set the record straight, so to speak, because everybody, you know, wants to put their 2 cents in, which is absolutely the way it should be. Very sad that he didn't get to come back. And that was huge. And that death, I had interviewed Todd just after... Well, before and after, actually, Mike died, and there were certainly different sides of Todd to both those interviews. You know, what I'll do with that later is kind of, up for debate. But when Todd passed, that was even bigger, because I'd been friends with Todd since I was 15, and I tattooed Todd regularly. And then when MIA reformed with Todd, that was the first time Todd had been in the band since he was 16, and now he's 45, 46 years old, fronting the band that 30 years previous broke his heart when he couldn't go. So that was, he kind of got a weird sense of closure, I think, on that. And it was great to see him up there. He was an incredible front man. But he more than anyone, you know, and with, you know, there are, of course, you know, it's easy to talk about the dead with a certain amount of respect, and I do have that. But Todd really, he really was the heart and soul of the Vegas punk scene, much more than Conley. And then we have the people that are still with us, you know, Geely and Markey, and Guy Griebel, and my God, so many names that deserve recognition, you know, better than I can give them, but that really held that scene together. But Todd was, he was an incredible frontman and a great friend, and I really, really do miss him dearly.
Now, you still play, obviously, with your band, The Vermin, and your bandmate, Rob Ruckus, plays in several other bands as well. I don't know how much you followed sort of the current scene, but I wondered how you would assess the health of it as far as punk rock.
Well, I think that even when what you would call the golden age or the height of the Vegas punk scene, we were complaining then. So I think that no matter what scene you have or where you have it, with the exception of maybe CBGBs in 77, they were probably pretty happy with that. But certainly with what we have here, it's very easy to complain. But what we do have now, and I don't really, maybe I should, but I don't follow so much of the newer bands coming up. I'm very surprised when we see them and they cite me as an influence and things. And that's really always great to hear. But any scene just gets to that point where it's just completely disjointed and everyone's complaining. But then you look back with some, you know, 10 years later, go, man, we really had it good. So, I mean, who knows?
right.
Everybody complains, and there's a handful of people that will make changes, and we certainly have more venues now than we've ever had, or not. I don't know. You know, you'd have to talk to which bands. I mean, if playing the Double Down every week is a venue, I guess we have that, right?
Right, sure. And that's fun.
Yeah, it is.
So you guys do
that
a lot.
I don't mind at all.
And I guess if things are going great, then that doesn't quite seem necessarily like the right scene for punk rock. Right, punk rock does best when it's kind of fighting for survival or fighting for something.
You know, yeah, some and it's hard now because you're dealing with a form of music that if you do the math is as old as just about anything that's popular now and has been commercialized and taken. You know, I was watching, I don't know if it was a Lexus commercial or something, and Iggy's playing in the background.
He was on American Idol recently.
Yeah, and some guy, you know, and Iggy can do whatever he wants, as far as I'm concerned. Sure. He'll outlast all of us. But it was just funny to me to see a guy pull up in, you know, $150,000 car, thumbing through, finds a Stooges record. You know, just a few weeks ago when I saw this commercial. I was like, what is going on? Not that shocked because certainly, you know, I think the Ramones were used briefly for selling something at one point, as was the Clash and everyone else. So everything. Everything you love will eventually be taken by the masses and then, you know, homogenized and sanitized and fed back to you on a T-shirt at Walmart. So there you go.
We should probably talk a little bit about this festival. So
sure.
Last year, Vermin played Punk Rock Bowling, I believe, last year.
Yeah, it was right? Windy as hell, but it was fun.
Yeah, that was over at Sunset, and now it's moving downtown. And I mean, having been around it, I'm sure, for a few years now, maybe tell folks what kind of a scene they can expect if they head down there. I mean, I'm guessing old faces, new faces.
Yeah, a lot of California people come down. I mean, people actually come from all over the country for this and world. You'll meet people from Germany and things like that as well. So yeah, it certainly has become a big deal. They had the problem last year of weather.
Right.
It was horrible. When CTSOL, I couldn't even stand it. I just put it on in my car and drove back to the shop, you know, but. I think that it'll cooperate with them this year. So certainly it looks like a really good lineup for sure.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the lineup, who would you, you know, a couple bands maybe that you'd recommend people check out?
Well, I think it's amazing. Like, we got Stiff Little Fingers coming through. Yeah, the Undertones, even without Fergal Sharkey, is the guy sounds really, really close. The Crowd, who my brother actually went and saw in L.A. recently, said they were amazing. Manic Hispanic's always good. Those guys are great. Coxbar, I cannot believe, is coming to Vegas.
That's got to be a first, I would think.
Boy, I didn't even know they were still touring, for sure. All Cadillac Tramps, it's a really good line. Pretty much every day, Dagelo Abortions. Oh my God, they're coming down. Turbo Negra is great. If anyone, that's at the Beauty Bar. This is a female tribute to Turbo Negro, that great metal band from Oslo, Norway. And these chicks are really good. I saw them with an all female AC/DC band, and some other all female thing. So that was really cool. They're a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, before we go, I wanted to just throw a word out. Obviously, you guys are playing a show as well, even though you're not playing the festival. You're playing on Tuesday at the Hard Rock Cafe, and you're opening for Guitar Wolf, which is just a great live band.
Guitar Wolf,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love that Ruckus keeps booking us on shows with bands that will blow us off the stage. But we'll be able to talk more. I know that. But yeah, Guitar Wolf is an amazing live band. Certainly with the Haze. I don't know if you saw them last time they were through, but
I didn't. No.
The Japanese love American everything, whether it's, you know, rock and roll or punk rock, and it's neat to see how they interpret our music and hand it back to us 1,000 miles an hour with big old smiles on their face the whole time. It's really an amazing thing, and you know, Guitar Wolf is a great band. They've been around a long time too, so
it's cool to see them here.
Yeah, sure. They haven't been here in a few years.
Right. Well, they played the Matador Fest, but that was kind of more of a private event. Yeah. So, well, Dirk, thanks a lot for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Appreciate it. And I'd also like to thank our producer, Stephen Zeller, for all his help with the show, as always. Well, this has been Spencer Patterson for Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. Join us again next Thursday night at 5:30 for more.